Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, here we are again. Hancock and Kelly are going to be here in the next hour, 9 o'clock hour. It's 5 minutes after 8 here at the KMOX breakfast table. Wow, the fare is just terrific. Pop-Tarts and Postum. How wonderful. Well, I really started thinking about good food, of which there's plenty to be found in St. Louis. So the prices have skyrocketed almost as high as the moon orbiters did. So when food comes to mind, I think about one person in particular, Suzanne Corbett. Suzanne Corbett, a famous food fan. Well, Suzanne, good morning. It is your turn. Welcome back to KMOX, and good morning to you.
Good morning, and how are you doing today?
Everything's good. It's a beautiful.
Are you hungry for some good food this morning?
Stop talking about food. I am hungry. What did I have?
Oh, well, good. Well,
I had a wonderful breakfast this morning. I have it right in front of me. I have a bottle of Premier Protein. So far, that's all I've had. Just the thought of it makes me hungry. What are you going to do? What are you doing today as far as food is concerned?
Well, I tell you what. Well, when you think of Sundays,
yep.
Traditionally you're thinking take a ride on the road,
yes,
and get that wonderful chicken dinner.
Oh,
those
dear.
Fried chicken dinners, oh, that were dear. Famous years ago. Maybe some people out there remember going to the Diamonds where you had fried chicken, or maybe going out just a little bit further down the road and finding chickens at these little church suppers and things that would go around. But everyone had their own special way of doing chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And on Route 66, one of the best places to go to today, that keeping that traditional, that roadhouse chicken dinner special, is Skippy's. Skippy's is in Lebanon, Missouri.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not very far. I'm sorry. It's in Leesburg, Missouri, just before you get to Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And Leesburg, you can go and look at the cave, come back before or after you have that famous chicken dinner that they serve. And it's their Sunday special, but they have it every day of the week.
Skippy's.
And those types of dinners.
Wow.
Skippy's.
How long has it been there?
Has it been there? Well, it's been there since the 1970. It's changed hands a couple of times. Skippy's had it since about 2000. It's a feature that I produced for Missouri Life in the February issue. If you want to read up on it a little bit more, it gives you more background about the place. But it's just literally a spot at the crossroads of 44, Highway 40, going out the old Route 66.
Mm-hmm.
It's off of those old alignments. And Route 66 is 100 years old. They're celebrating at this year. And there's all kinds of wonderful things that are going along on the route that includes eating up at these great little diners and burger stops and mom and pop spots are hitting the trail, such as you want to start your route west in Illinois. A lot of people say start in St. Louis. Start in Illinois.
Okay.
And what I like to do is get my car gassed up, start at Springfield, and eat at the Made Right Diner. The Made Right Diner is legendary because it was considered the first true drive-through fast food burger place in the country.
There's
a couple of people there are a couple of people that will kind of say, well, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But they seem to have a pretty good lock on it. They've been around since 1924. It was put in an old railroad car. So you literally had to drive past it, have a window that you could get your food in and out of. And the Made Right burger is a loose meat burger.
Uh-huh.
Think of it as the sloppy Joe without the slop. It's all put together on the bun. It's wonderful. And you can have it with or without cheese and side of fries. But you're not going to get all the other fancy stuff. It's a short menu.
Mm-hmm.
It's tiny, but it's miney. And, oh, my goodness, it is so good.
How long would it take to drive from St. Louis?
Oh, about 90 minutes.
That's not bad. See a lot of interesting things?
You could see a lot of interesting things and maybe stop and have a horseshoe sandwich, which is one of the signature items that Illinois puts their arms around. Have you had one?
I did.
Well, have you had a horseshoe sandwich?
No, I've never even heard of it before. Doesn't sound very good.
I know it sounds not the best, but it's very famous in Illinois, and you'll see it across the river here. It'll jump the river, but it is Texas toast. It's like an open face Texas toast. You can have almost any kind of meat you want, but it started with slices of ham, which they said looked like a horseshoe, which makes me wonder, was that a Clydesdale horseshoe?
Right.
Or why? Because, you know, think of a slice of ham. And then it's topped with French fries that is supposed to look like the nails that goes into the horseshoe, and then covered in cheese sauce.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm thinking that it is a first cousin once removed of the Kentucky hot brown, which is an open-faced ham and cheese and cheese sauce.
Sort of like a prosperity sandwich in a way.
With an attitude, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, with an attitude.
Hey, a book.
There's 24. Yes, sir.
A book. You've got how many books on now? Three, four, five?
Well, there's four.
Four.
There are four.
There's a Culinary History of Missouri, Foodways and Iconic Dishes of the Show Me State. Now, it says Foodways. What are Foodways?
Foodways is the old ways, the historical aspects of cooking. So you're looking at how grandma or great-grandma or maybe how the Romans made ice cream, the different aspects of how food contributes to culture, to the society. And many of these things revolve just not around the technique and the recipes, but also their place in time. Some foods come in and out of trends, you know, it's its popularity, and then they disappear. You can look at that all through time and kind of see how things like that have happened. A good example, a great snack from the 1960s, you might remember Screaming Yellow Zonkers.
Yeah, I do remember
it
that.
They were wonderful. It was like a caramel popcorn thing for all the hippies and me being a proud former hippie, they were wonderful. You always had to have them. Screaming Yellow Zonkers. But I don't think there'd be a Screaming Yellow Zonker trail. There's lots of historical, nostalgic food trails that are out there, but you're not going to have that. Although there are popcorn trails in Illinois, and there's other trails along in Missouri, like the Cashew Chicken Trail, which is right in the heart of Springfield, Missouri, which is where Route 66 was officially named.
That's right.
These guys got together and was trying to figure out the numbers. But figure that out and then go out, tour the special events that are going on in Springfield, Missouri, that represent the route this year, and then check out the one and only Leon Cashew Chicken.
Well, Suzanne, hold on if you can for just a couple of minutes, and we'll come back. I want to talk to you about the book from the Campbell House and also Unique Eats and Eatery. So we'll be right back with Suzanne Corbett and KMOX.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Johnny Rabbit at your service, and good morning. It's 18 after 8 o'clock. The sun is out. It's a beautiful day, and it's a great day to talk about food. We're talking to Suzanne Corbett, who knows all about food. We talked about one book. Now there's another. It has to do with the Campbell House Museum. Suzanne, what's that book?
Well, that's The Gilded Table, and that has been a passion of mine. I've been working with the Campbell House for a number of years, and it looks at all of the recipe collections that are at the Campbell House that we interpret, that runs from the fanciful dinners that Virginia Campbell staged in their beautiful dining room, where they serve people, the luminaries of the day, like General Grant and his wife, and Tecumseh Sherman, to just the regular simple folk that worked for their son, Hugh, that they would throw parties for. And it was just, it's just such a wonderful house to go visit that has such a culinary background where you can look at their contribution to the community through the food and the food ways that they embraced and shared throughout the St. Louis area, from providing candy to the poor kids, helping supply Father Dunn Newsboys home with food, and on from there. And today, over 100 years later, you're still using food at the Campbell House as an interpretive message to learn more about St. Louis history.
So you prepare things. You go there and prepare things as well for special events, don't you?
Yes, I do. We do. We've done some special dinners. We have done an ice cream social, which we're going to redo this August, which I think is very exciting. Some we're going to be doing a couple of cooking classes towards fall, which is nice. But I'm really excited about the connection between the Campbells and General Grant, because when we had our last huge event a couple of years ago where we did the farm table to the gilded table, what we did was we had a celebration of the fanciful foods and the farm foods of General Grant that he shared at his wife's family farm at Whitehaven, the National Historic Site, Ulysses S. Grant National Historic Site, and the Campbell House. This year is the 200th birthday of Julia Grant, Grant's wife, and we're kind of reformulating that. We're going to concentrate on just the farm table and partner with Grant's farm across the street, which was actually part of the original farm property that made up the Whitehaven Plantation Farm that was owned by Grant's father-in-law, Colonel Dent. So I'm in the process of working the menu out, trying to figure out which foods and vegetables and things that we can relate from the farm that they grew into a wonderful dining experience that will excite people with the 21st century palate.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific. Now, there's another book, A Unique Eats and Eateries. I always like that since I did the introduction to the book. That's been out for, about 9 years now.
It's close to 9 years, yeah. It's time to renew. So maybe we'll do something new. But there are a couple of restaurants in there. Well, unfortunately, there's several that have disappeared. They're no longer with us.
Right.
Like Tony's. I would have never thought that Tony's would disappear.
Yep.
But
me
they're
either.
Gone. I mean, there's recipes, restaurants of the past that you just hunger for that I wish would have stayed on a little bit. But for one reason or the other, with the economic you're talking about, the increased costs, it's very hard. The restaurant business is tough. It is tough. But if you...
Yeah, the prices are unbelievably high.
But if you're able to connect with some of these restaurateurs and provide a source for their recipes, their stories as a repository, then the things that they did that you could sample lives on. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And that's what I do.
Now, are you planning...
I collect these recipes and I recreate them.
Are you planning another book?
We're kind of knocking around something. I'm thinking about a way that we can eat up St. Louis again.
Now, what about Oasis? You have programs at Oasis. You have one coming up?
Yes, I do. I just finished one on eating up Missouri with a focus on Harry Truman, on filling Harry's plate. We just finished that one, and then we have a farm table, a farm and market that we're going to be looking at, the history of markets and farming in St. Louis County. And I'm a pretty good kid to do that because I was raised on a South St. Louis truck farm.
Uh-huh.
So I know all about how to sell those tomatoes and dig those potatoes and what farm market and what restaurant's going to be buying the produce fresh.
Oh, that's great.
And we'll share a couple of recipes with them.
That's terrific. Do you have a podcast by any chance?
No, I don't. Maybe we should get together and do one, Rabbit.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe. A lot of people do it. It's amazing how many podcasts must exist in this world. Victory Gardens.
I know. There's so much. Victory Gardens?
They may come back.
I think you're going to see a lot of those things come back. Victory Gardens, I think you're going to see a lot of just plain comfort food. Mm-hmm. Big pots of great tasting things like Italian pastas, sauces, stews that feed a lot of people. You don't have to have a lot of meat to add vegetables and things like that nature to feed a good large family and have a good party. Yeah. You're going to see those recipes come back up into trending again. And when you do see the finery at the tables again, I think that's going to come back. People are going to embrace grandma's china again and enjoy dining and entertaining at home because it's getting really expensive to go out.
It sure has. Well, Suzanne, thank you. Thank you for all that you've offered. You've made me very hungry today. But before we go, what are you having today? What do you have a dinner today? Is anything special that you're doing?
Is there anything special? Well, I'm going down to the Campbell House. They're going to be doing a program on mountain men and things like that.
Oh, okay.
And I can tell you one thing: I'm not going to be eating mountain men jerky or pemmican or any of that stuff. I'm going to save myself. And I think after talking about chicken, I'm going to go find myself one and fry it up.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne Corbett, very much.
Thanks, Rabbit.
This is Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service. It's 27 minutes after 8 on KMOX. Now on KMOX, the yours truly, Johnny Rabbit. Good morning.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, it's 8:31. Time to take you to number one Theater Drive. That's the address of the Muni, and the 108th season is on the way to guide us to some of the Muni's past, and then into the very near future, what's going to be there. We welcome Gabe Hartwig, the Muni's media maven, as Jerry Berger, one of his predecessors, might have said. Hey, Gabe is on the line right now, but not from Forest Park. Where the heck are you, Gabe?
Hey, Johnny, good morning. Actually based in Los Angeles now. It's a rainy Sunday morning here in L.A.
Oh, my God. Rain? Hard to believe. Well, I'm glad you're here. Muni is such a truly cherished institution, tradition for St. Louis. What about some of the memories of the Muni? Do you have any highlights of the past?
Oh, man. For me personally, I'm not from St. Louis. I'm from Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is about 2 hours south, but I just have such memories of since I moved to St. Louis 20 years ago, just not knowing really what to expect and then getting there and just being overwhelmed by this incredible musical theater experience that I never could have imagined until I got there. And I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people who are discovering the Muni for the first time. So we're happy to be that, you know, that sort of wow for people who are discovering us every summer.
Yeah.
So come join us. Come join us. Season 108, 64 days away. I just did the math and I can't believe it.
Oh my gosh. And what's going to be the first, what are the productions? What are the lists today for this season?
Okay. So we open our season June 15th with the return of Hairspray. And that's a show we haven't done since 2015. You know, Hairspray is based on the popular film by John Waters. It's about young Tracy Turnblad who dreams of winning the affections of Link Larkin and integrating a popular TV dance show. And it's just a really fun, dancey musical with a lot of really good songs and a great message. And we think that's going to be a really fun way to open season 108.
Then what's coming up after those, after that show?
With the return of Shrek the Musical, that's a family favorite. That one's going to run for 8 nights this season. that's based on the Oscar-winning DreamWorks animation film from, was that 20-something? But it's a, you know, it's a fun fairy tale adventure that's perfect for the whole family. We follow that with the return of Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific, a great American classic. It's one of Broadway's greatest musicals, set during World War II. We follow that with another show that's kind of great for the whole family, Disney's Newsies.
Sure.
A popular Disney film that's based on a true story about the newsboys' strike. It's full of empowering anthems and incredible choreography. Then we follow that with a Muni premiere, Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations. That's an exciting new worldwide and Broadway hit that makes its Muni premiere. It's based on the true story of the Temptations, of course. Features, you know, hits like My Girl, Just My Imagination, Get Ready, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. All those songs are going to make you want to sing along from your seat.
Yeah, I bet they will.
We bet they will. We hope they don't, but we probably will. We follow that with the return of, you know, one of our biggest Muni hits ever, Meet Me in St. Louis. That's based on the great musical starring Judy Garland with songs like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, The Boy Next Door, The Trolley Song. That was last seen as part of our centennial season in 2018. So we're really excited to bring that one back to Forest Park, you know, sort of the setting where the whole movie takes place, really. And then we close our season with another Muni premiere, Something Rotten. That's sort of a comic mashup of 16th century Shakespeare and 21st century Broadway. So that's going to be a really fun way to close the Muni season. So come join us.
What about season tickets? Are they on sale now?
Season tickets are actually on sale right now. Yeah, they've been on sale for a while. They went on sale earlier than ever before. You can get those for as low as $126 at muni.org or from the box office in Forest Park. And single tickets go on sale May 18th, so really soon.
So what about the free seats? Are they still there?
Of course the free seats are always there.
Good, good.
Image of the free seats when we were founded in 1919, and for every production, we give away close to 1,500 free seats that are first come, first served.
That's great.
So we're really proud of that commitment to our community and to accessibility. So that's another way that people, you know, so many people experience the Muni for the first time from the free seats. And we're really proud to, you know, make that an option.
Well, thank you, Gabe. Gabe Hartwig, you've been very kind to be with us on this very early hour for you in rainy, rainy Southern California. That doesn't happen. I can't believe it.
I'm always happy to talk about the Muni anytime.
Okay. See you at the Muni. It's going to be a great year.
See
Gabe
that.
Hartwig,
thanks.
Thank you very much for being here. I was just thinking, I said the same thing before the 2020 season that COVID killed. Just yesterday, I was actually wearing my Muni 2020, must be a collector sweatshirt, with a list of shows that didn't happen that year. Chicago, Mary Poppins, Sweeney Todd, Smokey Joe's Cafe, Sound of Music on Your Feet, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and COVID, of course, also killed my Route 66 oldies show on KMOX. I've got quite a collection of Muni programs, and I bet a lot of our listeners do. Keep those. They're so interesting to look at years later. I was just looking at one yesterday from 1954 when Paul Beisman was the Muni manager. One of the productions was Oklahoma with Gretchen Weiler, and a KMOX show was on that year in the Muni called Summer in St. Louis with Muni stars every Tuesday at 7. It also ran on the CBS radio network. Another one of the programs I have 10 years later in 64, one of the shows was Carousel with Bruce Yarnell. Many of the places to go before or after the Muni, but some are still around. But one of them that was really big then was the Frontier Room at the Montclair Apartments. Well, that's enough of the Muni right now because it is really an exciting season. Something that is still exciting in St. Louis, and it's been gone for 122 years. But it's still here in a way. We're going to find out more about that from Mike Truax in the next few minutes on KMOX. It's about, of course, I'm talking about the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair. It's Johnny Rabbit, Hancock and Kelly are going to be here a little after 9 o'clock. And we were talking about Route 66 in that commercial break. And I'll be doing a feature program, a presentation about the Route 66 at 100 years old. We'll cover the greater St. Louis area. That's at the Missouri History Museum on Tuesday, July 21st. Hope you can make it there. Well, something that's going on at the Missouri History Museum, it's still about the Louisiana Purchase Exposition. The guy who knows all about this is here. He's one of the guiding lights of the St. Louis World's Fair Society. Hi, Mike Truax. Thanks for being here this morning.
Hello, Ron. Johnny, how are you today?
I'm great. What's you're doing great, I would assume.
Well, it's certainly keeping me busy. The World's Fair Society started 40 years ago, mm-hmm. and we put a monthly bulletin out every month for 40 years, and we've had monthly meetings every month for 40 years.
That's a lot. That is a long time. I had no idea. Have you been there the whole time or most of that time?
Well, most of that time. I joined about 30 years ago, mm-hmm. and I found it on the website, World's Fair, www.1904worldsfairsociety.org, and you can join on that website and begin getting our newsletters and coming to our meetings. You don't have to be a member to come to our meetings. They're open to the public.
Oh, that's good. Good to know. But why not be a member? I mean, you get a lot of benefits. Certainly the newsletter is, it's an 8-page newsletter every month, really filled with great information. Now, what about back at the History Museum? They just recently redid the World's Fair exhibit. So what do you see, will you see in that original exhibit now?
Well, that's correct. They had gone almost 20 years without updating the World's Fair exhibit. And as the 120th anniversary of the World's Fair came around back in 2024, and actually, the effort started during COVID in 2020 mm-hmm. to plan for it. But things got delayed a little bit, but they did get it done, and they built a tremendous new exhibit. They had to redo the whole room, power, electricity, infrastructure. But they built a 1 to 400 scale model of the entire fairgrounds that shows almost all the major buildings realistically. And some of those buildings are up to 3 feet long and about 12 inches tall.
Wow.
On a scale model that's in the middle of that room. They pulled out a whole lot of new exhibits and artifacts that were been put away for, you know, decades in their vaults and stuff like
sure.
that had been donated to them and put them on display, including the masterworks to the floral clock, which the World's Fair Society found back in 1990 that had been taken by the company that made it, the Johnson Service Company, and was up in Milwaukee. And we managed to find that and purchase that and bring it back to St. Louis.
So you can see the works right there. And now there's a new room that is just open.
That's correct. The History Museum had a plan going back 4 or 5 years ago that the back room, which had not been used for a display for many, many years, in fact, had become a storage room, to start using that and to refresh the exhibit every 2 years. So for the first 2 years, they basically had a display of a lot of souvenirs that were purchased at the fair and available. And many St. Louisans have, you know, a few little souvenirs of the fair, and they had a lot of that stuff on display, including some big and unusual stuff. And then about a year or so ago, they said they were going to refresh that every 2 years and change it to something else. And this year, they unveiled just yesterday a large exhibit all about the Ferris wheel. In fact, there's a near full-size mock-up of a Ferris wheel car. And when you see how big a Ferris wheel car was back in 1904 and walk inside of it and look through the windows and see some of the views that people could see from the Ferris wheel cars when they were up high, you grasp a whole lot better how enormous that Ferris wheel was. And to go with that, there's a video board that shows about 10 different stages of construction of the Ferris wheel. And seeing the people climbing on the girders and the ropes that brought the pieces up and together, because that Ferris wheel was, of course, built originally for the Chicago 1893 World's Fair and purchased for scrap by a wrecking company. But then they negotiated to bring it down to the St. Louis World's Fair and give it a second life at another World's Fair. The views that they show are just amazing. And there's some amazing little pieces of information that in the past 10 or 20 years, Steve Schmitz, who's been researching the Ferris wheel, and the constructor, George Washington Gale Ferris, for about 25 or 30 years, that, for example, we found out that there was a searchlight on top of one of the wheels, that at night, you could take a night ride on the Ferris wheel and look at the World's Fair all lit up and see the searchlight shining at different objects, kind of like the searchlight on top of the University City City Hall.
Right. Interesting. Well, Mike, thank you for this update. And A Marvel of Motion is the name of this new opening at the History Museum. It has got to be something to see. I haven't seen yet, but I will get there soon. And Mike is with the St. Louis World's Fair Society. Mike Truex, thank you very much for being with us.
And Ron, can I say one more
thing
real quick?
That's okay.
In that exhibit, and one of the things that we've been researching is trying to put to rest and resolve the urban legend about the axle.
I know.
The axle has been thought to be buried somewhere near Forest Park and the Ferris wheel for decades and decades. Yeah. Lots of searches, lots of urban legends of where it was and stuff like that. But between the documentation from the wrecking company and some newspaper reports in 1906, 1907, it's very certain that it was taken back to Chicago and eventually cut up for scrap about 1917.
So you've cleared up a St. Louis mystery that a lot of people won't believe. A lot of people think it's still there, but I think you're right.
Well, some people are somewhat perturbed that we've destroyed an urban legend that people could keep looking for it. But the facts that we've uncovered show that it went back and was eventually used for more scrap.
I'm sure you're right. Mike Truex from the World's Fair Society. Good morning and thanks a lot.
Good morning. Thanks, Ron.
Since it's Tuesday at 10 at the Clayton Community Center, I'll be doing a program on St. Louis theaters, movies related to St. Louis, and our town's movie stars. I thought one of my curious quirks that I would bring up befuddles my wife, and I can almost instantly recall the theater in which I saw a movie, as well as other things about what I did before or after the show and tidbits of that time. Maybe you can do the same. And you think about a movie? Do you think about just the movie or the theater, too? For example, at a matinee in 1948, I saw a very strange but kind of forgettable seagoing picture called A Wreck of the Hesperus. That was at the Uptown Theater on Del Mar between Kings Highway and Euclid. It had been the Embassy Theater before that. And after the show, I had a barbecue beef sandwich and a 3V Cola at Tasty Barbecue. That was at the southeast corner of Kings Highway and Del Mar. The 3 V's in that high-caffeine cola stood for Vim, Vigor, and Vitality. Sandwich was pretty good, but wasn't as good as those served at the Hampton Village Bettendorf supermarket lunch counter. That's when that store was promoted as being the world's largest supermarket. That's the one in Hampton Village. By the way, it was almost the site, the Hampton Village, of a very large movie theater planned by the Fred Wehrenberg Circuit that was designed in the Williamsburg colonial style of architecture used for the other buildings in the 4 buildings originally in Hampton Village. Now, the theater would have been where the current Schnucks store is located, but weeks before construction started, Wehrenberg dropped the idea and decided that based on so many people having new cars after the war, and with families leaving the city in droves to the quickly expanding suburbs, they'd be better off buying land when it was still pretty cheap and invest in drive-in theaters. And, of course, they were right. Another movie I saw in 1948, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It was at the Shenandoah Theater, South Grand, between Shenandoah and Victor. The theater had been given a rehab. The exterior facelift came around in 41. The inside, there was still a lot of elements from the theater when it was built in 1912. That scary, funny flick had Lon Chaney as the Wolfman, Glenn Strange as Dr. Frankenstein's monster, and Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula. Now, hard to imagine, but it was just the second and final time that Lugosi played the role of Dracula in a movie. Before the movie, I indulged in a bowl of turtle soup at the Pelican on the northeast corner of Grand and Shenandoah, and even though I was I was definitely under the legal drinking age, they gave me a tiny bottle of sherry to spice up the soup. It was very good. The movie was basically a comedy, but with all the monsters in it, I did feel a little uneasy walking home down Grand to Flora Place all the way to Tower Grove on that hot, moonlit summer night. A much more frightening movie was The Thing from Another World. This was usually referred to simply as The Thing. It starred James Arness playing the role of The Thing. It was at the Fox Theater in 1951. That was just the second year that the late Stan Kenton was performing nightly in the theater's mighty Wurlitzer organ, which dated to 1929. Of course, as it is today, it's a beautiful building thanks to Leon and Mary Strauss, who saved the theater, literally, from demolition. Our fabulous Fox is the greatest of all our movie houses, past and present. Before the show, I had a tuna salad sandwich on toast. I don't know why I remember these things, along with a chocolate malt at the Walgreens lunch counter in the Metropolitan Building at Grand and Olive. It's odd what comes to mind if you think about the past. In 51, I saw Granite City neighbor, a native, Whip Wilson. He was a Monogram Pictures cowboy movie star, kind of like PRC Studios' Lash LaRue. I saw him in Dead or Alive with his sidekick Fuzzy Knight at the Melba on South Grand in Miami. And after that, I had an open-faced chicken sandwich and mashed potatoes at the Alba Restaurant across the street on Gravoy. To me and others, many theaters are as memorable as the movie showing in the silver screen. It was 100 years ago this year that Marcus Lowe, who founded Lowe's Theater, famously said, "People buy tickets to see the theaters, not movies." Well, he said that before movies talked and when vaudeville was still at its peak. It stayed true during the Great Depression as the movie palaces and stylish neighborhood theaters offered escape from those hard times, even though most of them and the movie studios were suffering as well. This clearly brings to mind theaters such as our Lowe's State, Lowe's Orpheum, Schubert, Missouri Empress, Ambassador, and St. Louis. Lowe's State, Schubert, Missouri Empress, as they say in the old westerns, they have bit the dust. The Lowe's Orpheum, later the American, is still standing, barely, at the southeast corner of 9th and St. Charles. It's unused, empty, forlorn, and I guess teetering on the edge of oblivion. But the original St. Louis Theater, built 101 years ago, is bigger and better than ever as the revitalized Powell Hall at the Jack C. Taylor Music Center at Grand and Delmar. Last movie to play there was, when it was a movie house, was, what a great movie for it, The Sound of Music. That was in 1966. After seeing it, I stopped by to hear pianist Dave Venn play at the Playboy Club when it was on Lindell. It opened there in 1962. Well, that's it for me for this time. See you soon. This is Johnny Rabbit on KMOX.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.